It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Libya peace talks set to take place January 5th, but the UN also warns Libyan militia may be liable for war crimes charges. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. UN envoy Bernardino Leon told the UN Security Council Tuesday the rival factions vying for power in Libya have agreed in principle to hold a new round of peace talks January 5th to focus on a ceasefire, a national unity government, and a new constitution. Chad's ambassador, Mohamed Zine Sharif, is this month's Security Council president and read from a council statement.
They called on the parties to accept an immediate ceasefire and engage in the dialogue process. Finally, the member of the Security Council reiterated their support for Mr. Bernardino Leon, special representative of the Secretary General, and encouraged him to continue his mediation efforts for the success of the dialogue between the Libyan actors.
Libya has effectively been without a government after the ouster of longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Its internationally recognized government fled to the eastern city Tobruk early this year as an Islamist militia and rival government seized control of the capital, Tripoli. The Libyan fighting has killed hundreds since August. UN Human Rights Commission spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani warned on Tuesday armed groups may be liable for war crimes.
As a commander of an armed group, you are criminally liable under international law if you commit or order the commission of grave human rights abuses or fail to take reasonable and necessary measures to prevent or punish their commission.
The UN estimates the death toll in Benghazi, where the army is battling Islamist groups for control, is 450 since mid-October. This is VOA News. Tunisia's new leader, Baji Kaid Essebsi, on Tuesday said the North African country has turned a page on dictatorship following Sunday's presidential runoff election that European observers hailed as both credible and transparent. The 88-year-old Essebsi, who served in previous Tunisian governments, was declared winner Monday, completing the country's transition to democracy. In a speech Tuesday to his supporters in Tunis, outgoing interim president Mansif Marzouki urged them to protect the country's national unity, national security, and civil peace. He urged them not to lose hope or confidence. He also announced he was creating a new movement to prevent the country from sliding back into authoritarian rule. The Kenyan opposition Tuesday lodged a legal challenge in the High Court against a controversial new anti-terror law, arguing it could lead to dictatorship. The new law, aimed at curbing terrorist activity in the East African country, was signed last Friday by President Uhuru Kenyatta. It gives authorities sweeping new powers to crack down on and detain terror suspects, including holding them for nearly a year. It also holds journalists and media outlets liable for punishment if they are seen as impeding investigations or security operations. Senator James Orengo, a lawyer and member of the Coalition for Reforms and Democracy, called the law invalid and inconsistent with the Constitution. In Zimbabwe, there appears little hope for an improved economy in the new year with the lack of foreign investment, low commodity prices, a liquidity crunch, and weak domestic savings. John Robertson is a local economic analyst.
We desperately need to change the policies that have done the damage to this economy. And those are the policies that have badly affected property rights, badly affected investor confidence, and badly affected the capacity that we have to generate products that will be competitive on the world markets. 300,000 kids left school a couple of weeks ago. Almost none of them will find work in this economy. And that is a serious tragedy.
He points to President Robert Mugabe's controversial policies of seizing white-owned commercial farms and plans to compel foreign companies to cede majority shareholding to local black residents. The 2015 budget, which is consumed almost entirely by the public sector, projects growth of 3.2%. Tanzania's Minister for Lands has been fired by President Jakaya Kikwete, the second top government official to be pushed out over a multi-million-dollar energy sector corruption scandal. Anna Tibaijuka is alleged to have received about $1 million from owners of an independent power producer, IPTL. The Attorney General has already resigned from his post, with the fate of the current energy minister, Sos Peter Muhongo, said to be hanging in the balance. Tanzania is believed to have more than 53 trillion cubic feet of gas reserves off its southern coast, but the allegations of graft have forced a delay in Western aid and weakened the currency. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. In Liberia's special senatorial election, the president's son concedes to football legend George Weah.
We want to thank all the people of Consolado County. I mean, it gives us an opportunity for them to share in what we were trying to accomplish. It gives us an opportunity to share in their lives. I also want to congratulate Mr. Weah for their victory.
Robert Sirleaf is the son of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. There's little voter enthusiasm in the Central African Republic as campaigning begins for next year's elections. A new United Nations report says Libya faces an escalating humanitarian and human rights crisis. And the African Union declares 2015 the year of the woman.
It's nice to have a woman president. It's nice to have a woman vice president. But more importantly, to bring a lot more women so that indeed there can be a critical mass of women.
Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma is the chairperson of the African Union Commission. A Zimbabwe minister's visit to Ukraine's Crimea region is causing an international uproar. And a scientific effort is underway to save Kenya's endangered rhinos. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's son, Robert, has congratulated Liberia football legend George Weah for winning the Montserrado County special senatorial election. Robert Sirleaf says while he would have loved to win, he nevertheless respects the voters' decision. Sirleaf, who ran as an independent candidate, objected to some analysts' view that his defeat is a referendum on his mother's government. He said he will take a short break and after that use the lessons he learned to continue to work in the interest of the people, particularly in economically challenged communities.
We want to thank all the people of Montserrado County. I mean, they gave us an opportunity for them to share in what we were trying to accomplish. It gives us an opportunity to share in their lives. I also want to congratulate Mr. Weah for their victory. On our campaign journey, we took a very positive road during the whole thing, just convinced that our people wanted to see a better way, even a better way to disagree. And they wanted to hear their leaders talk about their interests, how to change their lives. For us, we wanted to win, but it's not always about the win. It's about the lives of our people. We're not going to stop. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to keep on caring. Some of the lessons that we learned, we use it to benefit our people.
Mr. Sirleaf, are you disappointed? Because I think when I spoke with you, you were upbeat. And you were looking forward to winning. Are you disappointed?
You know, James, one is always disappointed when you're not accomplished to get to that goal. But I'm very proud of the fact that the people of Montserrat County got a chance to hear our story and in some extension to the people of Liberia. But, yeah, you know, we definitely would have liked to win. It didn't happen. People chose another path, and it's fine. We learned a lot.
Some people, some analysts have interpreted the results as a referendum on your mother's administration. What's your take on that?
Well, then I would assume that CDC would have won all the other counties and they lost 16 out of 70.
So you don't believe that?
What I'm looking at, I haven't really looked at, you know, very deep on the analysis, but I'm saying it depends how you look at the question. If you're asking the question, for example, was a referendum of the CDC party versus the LA administration, then they would have won in the same manner in every other county, right? And that did not happen.
What's next for you, Mr. Sirleaf?
Time off. You know, I think we've been at this for 4 to 5 months, Mr. Buckley. So everyone's rest, give everybody a chance to enjoy the holiday period with their families, and then we come right back. For me, that's mid-January or early January, starting getting the BYC football team ready for the CAF championships. And then back into the communities is what we have to do. You know, we still owe them that opportunity and hope, and we're going to continue to do that.
There were allegations that you were paying off voters. Did you pay people to vote for you?
Not at all, Jim. It's the most ridiculous thing, and I think that's a vindication. If you look at the results, if we were going to pay our voters, you wouldn't have the results you have. And so I don't think anybody actually, you know, we did not do that. We did not buy any voting cards, none whatsoever. It's not something that we're built for. We don't do things like that. It was about the people of Montserrat County having their choice.
You mentioned earlier you learned some lessons. What are some of the lessons you learned from this process?
We have to work hard in our communities. We really have to work harder to show people that we had a good, solid program. We just have to do that.
Mr. Sirleaf, it's a pleasure to talk with you. I'm glad that I don't have to wake you up today, and thank you very much.
Yeah, I know. All right, Mr. Buddy. Thank you. The best to you and your family in the holidays and all your listeners.
A happy holidays to you.
Thank you very much.
Robert Sirleaf is the son of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Politicians in the Central African Republic have started campaigning for presidential elections scheduled for next year, but there appears to be little voter enthusiasm for many of the candidates. Nick Long reports for VOA from Bangui.
In the past few weeks, several of the Central African Republic's political parties have named candidates for the presidential elections, while some independent politicians have also announced presidential ambitions. The candidates include party leaders such as former Prime Ministers Martin Zigele and Nicolas Tiangai, and independents such as businessman Amin Michel and college professor Gaston Mandata Ngerikata. But given the current state of the country, with most of its territory controlled by armed groups and ethnic killings continuing in some areas, politicians struggle to be taken seriously by the general public. VOA asked people in the streets of Bangui who they would vote for in an election. Few were ready to name a candidate.
C'est trop tôt. Il faut désarmer d'abord le kilomètre 5. J'ai été victime.
It is too soon to talk of elections, says this woman, Clarice Bemba. I am a victim of what happened in the Kilometre 5 area, she says. I lost my three younger brothers and my property because of the violence in that area. She was referring to killings and banditry in and around a part of Bangui inhabited by the Muslim community. Since March 2013, when the largely Muslim Seleka rebels seized power in Bangui, violence has ebbed and flowed around the Kilometre 5 area. Many in the CAR's political class are tainted by association with the Seleka, who still control nearly half the country, but are hated by most of the population. Next August is the target date for elections, but many think that date will be missed and are more focused on a political forum to be held early next year, which armed group leaders are expected to attend. Until that forum, politicians are not committing themselves to detailed programs.
Je sais pas qui je vais aller voter parce que apparemment tout le monde paraît quoi.
I don't know who I'm going to vote for, says Desire Gutia, a cook by trade, because they're all the same. Their speeches send you to sleep, he says. They pretend they want to help us, but there are no candidates with a real political plan that I can see. 18-year-old Fiston Wayagu says he will stay out of politics.
Je ne suis pas pour voter, quoi. Parce que de nos jours, là, quand tu votes, la personne pour qui tu as opté pour voter...
I'm not for voting, he says, because the person you vote for does not get elected. There's too much corruption. In VOA's snap poll of about 10 people, only one person had a preferred candidate. Gaston Mandata, former minister and mathematics professor living in the United States. Central African political analyst Didier Kalanda told VOA that talk of elections is premature until the security situation has improved. But he says he is confident the Bangui Forum will be held fairly soon because the armed group leaders are losing control of their groups and want to leverage political power while they still can. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
The African Union has declared 2015 the Year of the Woman as the world next year takes stock of progress made since the Beijing conference some 20 years ago. AU Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma says the Union takes seriously the need to empower African women to seek more leadership positions.
It was 20 years ago, 1995, that women from all over the world gathered in Beijing and put a platform for action. And I think 20 years on, it's a good time to assess and evaluate what progress has been made since Beijing. Also for the continent dedicated 2010 to 2020 as the decade of African women. And next year will be halfway through that decade. So it will be important to also take stock of what has happened during the first 5 years of that decade and to plan on how we can do more in the last 5 years. And of course, Agenda 2063 has to unleash the potential of both women and youth.
From what we have seen politically in countries like Malawi, Zimbabwe, where people were looking forward to having women leaders in one way or the other, people are saying there have been major losses in terms of what they have seen in Joyce Banda, in Joyce Mujuru. What can the AU Commission do in trying to strengthen the position of women to ensure that we have more women leaders in Africa?
One of the things that we have to look at is strengthening women who want to get into politics, to assist them, to build their capacity. But also not to look at one woman in a country, but to look at women at all levels, women in the municipality, the lives of Africans are affected so much at the municipal level. So we need to have women there at the coalface at the municipal level. We need to have women at the national level, where there are provinces and counties. We need to have women at those levels. So we have to build the capacity of women, not just one woman, because one swallow does not break the summer. It's nice to have a woman president. It's nice to have a woman vice president, and we should try and strive for that. But more importantly, to bring a lot more women so that indeed there can be a critical mass of women, even to influence getting women at the top.
That was African Union Commission Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. She spoke from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, with Sandra Nyaira of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Today is Wednesday, December 24th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 and a half minutes past the hour. A new report says Libya is facing an escalating humanitarian and human rights crisis as fighting among armed groups continue unabated. The report by the UN Human Rights Office documents widespread violations across Libya, resulting in hundreds of killings and mass displacement. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The situation in Libya is far from the heady days of the so-called Arab Spring. At that time, rival groups were united in their desire to topple the country's dictator, Muammar Gaddafi. Now, any sense of unity is gone. This latest UN assessment of the situation in Libya details wide-ranging abuse throughout the country. It says armed groups are terrorizing the civilian population and preventing politicians from creating a society based on the rule of law. The report notes fighting in recent months has resulted in hundreds of civilian deaths, mass displacement, and acute humanitarian conditions for those trapped in conflict zones. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says the report documents indiscriminate shelling of civilian areas, the abduction of civilians, torture, reports of executions, and the deliberate destruction of property. She tells VOA, fighting throughout the country has escalated since mid-May.
Since then, there has just been persistent violation. There is a serious lack of law and order. There is absolutely no accountability. So these violations are continuing with impunity, and there has been no effort to really stop that. Some of these crimes may amount to war crimes.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad al-Hussein warns all parties involved in grave abuses of international human rights and humanitarian law are criminally liable. He notes the International Criminal Court is investigating the situation in Libya. In western Libya, in the area of Washafana, the UN mission reports fighting between rival armed groups has killed an estimated 100 people and wounded 500 between August and early October. The investigators say the fighting is causing a humanitarian crisis. They note at least 120,000 people who have fled their homes are suffering severe shortages of food and medical supplies. Shamdasani says 450 people have been reported killed in Benghazi since fighting escalated in mid-October.
Residents are facing serious shortcomings in medical care as hospitals have been hit or occupied by armed groups. UNSMIL, the UN support mission in Libya, has also received reports of fighters wearing uniforms of the Libyan Red Crescent Society and using one of its ambulances to carry out a suicide attack. Tit-for-tat attacks on property have also led to the destruction of many houses, and more than 15,000 families, which is about 90,000 people, have been displaced from Benghazi.
Most UN staff has been evacuated to Tunisia because of the dangers in Libya. It is monitoring the situation from there. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ukraine has raised serious concern about a recent visit by Zimbabwe's Environment Minister Silvio Kasukuweri to the disputed region of Crimea. Ukraine is in a bitter dispute with Russia over control of the region.
The Crimea used to be under Kiev, but held a referendum which was supported by just 11 of the 193 member countries in the United Nations General Assembly. International relations expert Clifford Mashiri says the Zimbabwe minister's visit is suspicious.
It is very suspicious that this Kasukuere, a commissar of ZANU-PF, finds himself in Crimea, a country that has no legitimacy according to the European Union. People are suspicious of what his intentions are. So it's believed that he is out there looking for arms because Zimbabwe is still under an arms embargo, which is true. So they are likely to be trying to get them over in view of the fact that the Russians have been given a lot of business deals in Zimbabwe, the platinum, and many others, I think diamonds as well, somewhere in Chimanimani. So they could be doing some deals, and Crimea is very desperate for foreign currency as well.
But is it wiser for Zimbabwe to do this at this juncture, judging from the fact that it is trying to mend ties with the European Union?
Zimbabwe has never bothered trying to mend ties with the European Union in a serious manner. They are still occupying farms. Zamara was, beaten up and all that. Those are human rights abuses. They are still continuing. So, in other words, ZANU-PF or the Zimbabwe government is not keen to really bow down to what the EU wants. What we suspect is that it's the EU which is desperate to re-engage Zimbabwe.
That was international relations expert Clifford Mashiri speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe program. Neither Mr. Masukuweri nor the foreign minister of Zimbabwe was available for comment. A conservancy in Kenya is home to three extremely rare rhinos pushed to the edge of extinction by man-made threats. VOA's East Africa correspondent Gabe Jaslow reports on last-ditch efforts to save the species.
Meet Najin, a northern white rhino, one of only five left in the world. Get to know her now, the furry fringe around her ears, her squat legs, because within our lifetimes, the northern white rhino could be gone forever. Mohamed Doyo, head keeper in charge of these rhinos at the Old Pajeta Conservancy in Kenya, says conflict has pushed this grouping to the brink of extinction.
This animal, they are originated in Congo, a place called Garamba, northern Congo. They were hiding themselves in a long grass. Not like southern white rhino, you can find them in open place. They like the long grass and hide themselves there. People fight against the tribalism in Congo, start killing this animal. They couldn't have anything to eat. They use as a food.
The animals here are heavily protected against the ever-present threat of poachers that has decimated all types of rhinos worldwide. The killing is driven by Asian demand due to the mistaken belief that the horns have medicinal properties.
I used to pet them behind the two legs like this and put them down, and they cut that horn today a little bit, tomorrow a little bit. After 1 week, I put that horn down. And we cut that horn purpose of security. Poachers kill our rhino because of the horn.
The population of this particular subspecies is dwindling fast. One of the rhinos here unexpectedly died in October. A zoo in the U.S. city of San Diego lost another in mid-December. But there is still one last northern white hope.
This is Sudan. He is 41 years old, and he is the last male northern white rhino on the planet. His past attempts at mating were unfortunately unsuccessful, so now conservationists are going to try a process of artificial insemination to try to save the species.
The plan is to artificially impregnate a young, fertile female or to use a southern white as a kind of surrogate mother. If that fails, then they may turn to crossbreeding to widen the gene pool.
You know, it's about preserving those genetic traits which confer upon the northern white as a species or a subspecies, whatever you want to call it, the ability to live in Central Africa with all of the disease and habitat challenges that presents. Those genetic traits could be preserved as part of a hybrid with a southern white. But as long as they're there, then one day, hopefully, maybe in 100 years' time, we'll be able to reintroduce rhinos into that part of Africa.
It might be a long shot, but at the moment, it is the only chance to keep these rhinos from disappearing forever. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Kenya.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Awuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Over 1,000 female athletes compete at the annual Shoe for Africa 10-kilometer road race at the world-famous high-altitude training center in Iten, Rift Valley Province in western Kenya today, Wednesday. The Shoe for Africa Foundation stages the charity event to raise funds to educate and purchase running shoes for female athletes from poor communities across the continent. The foundation founder, Toby Tanza, told the Kenyan media in Nairobi. Meanwhile, Ugandan defending champions Ndeje University amassed 34 golds, 28 silver and 36 bronze medals to top the medal table at the Eastern Africa University Games staged at the Uganda Christian University in Mukono, some 30 kilometers east of the Ugandan capital Kampala. Uganda's Kampala International University, runners-up, then hosts Uganda Christian University, then Kenya's Kenyatta University. Teams were vying for honors in 18 sporting disciplines over 5 days. In rugby news, Guinea, Lesotho, Malawi and Sierra Leone are the latest national federations to be admitted into the Confederation of African Rugby, the continental body revealed in Paris, France. The body also revealed that plans are afoot to set up an African Sevens Circuits series modeled on the World Rugby Sevens series. The African Rugby body revealed that the African series may be played in Kenya, Morocco, Tanzania, Tunisia, Uganda, Zambia and Zimbabwe, where they have active sevens competitions. Finally, Egypt has cancelled the 5-day Arab Gymnastics Championships, which they were to host in Sharm el-Sheikh from today, Wednesday. This follows the withdrawal of Morocco and Tunisia, which left Qatar and Egypt as the only teams in the contest. The Egypt Gymnastics Federation head, Abdel Hamid Abdel Mohen, told the media in Sharm el-Sheikh. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ome in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A top United Nations official says rival factions vying for power in Libya have agreed in principle to hold a new round of peace talks in early January. UN Libyan envoy Bernardino Leon told the 15-member Security Council that the long-delayed talks are set for January 5th and will focus on a ceasefire, a national unity government, and a new constitution. Libya was effectively left without governance after long-time dictator Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown in 2011. Two experimental Ebola vaccines, one against the related Marburg virus, have proven to be safe and effective in generating an immune response against the deadly infections. The findings are from the first vaccine trial against the microbes known as floriviruses in Africa. A study announcing the results conducted in Kampala, Uganda, is published in the journal The Lancet. A press freedom group says at least 60 journalists have been killed this year while doing their job. And that's it for this Wednesday, December 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Tony Harris, I'm James Barty in Washington, saying to all of you in Africa, have a good day.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.